Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of Idaho is now in session pursuant to law.
Thank you, everyone, to see you. Good morning once again, welcome to the Idaho Supreme Court for our third final hearing of the University of Idaho College of Law, facing Captain Brad Barton versus Board of Regents at the University of Idaho, case number 540756. On this matter, Rory E. Barton is appealing and representing herself this morning in this field. And the respondents are represented by Bentley G. Stromberg and Fitzmaurice.
Yes,
sir. Fitzmaurice, so for your clerk.
Fitzmaurice,
I apologize. Thank you. Representing the Board of Regents for the University of Iowa and the Iowa State Board of Education. Please note, two justices are excused in this matter. Justice Robin Brody and Justice Colin John have been excused and have accused themselves. We are pleased to have Senior Justice Robert Brody sitting with us, as well as District Judge Richard Christensen, who both are acting as pro tem justices in this matter and will fully participate. With that, Ms. Barton, counsel, anything for the court prior to argument today?
Thank you, Commissioner.
Ms. Barton, you may proceed.
May it please the court.
Please speak up if you will. Thank you.
My name is Laura Barton and I am the appellate judge matter. I respectfully ask this court to reverse the district court's decisions in the matter of the complaint, reverse the trial court's entry of summary judgment, remand the case for trial, or construct a new hearing before the university. If this court finds that the decision is not an amendment, every complaint should be reversed. There is no need to reach a decision on entry for summary judgment. Should this court reverse any decision of the trial court, the judgment of attorney's fees shall also be reversed. The issue before the court, following the district court, erred in not allowing the amendment of the complaint when respondents requested the name. The amendment and the district court did not execute a decision on the amendment of the breach of contract claim. Additionally, whether the district court erred in granting the respondent summary judgment and denying the motion for reconsideration when the university promised to adjudicate all court violations upon renewal, but withheld information from the record, thereby disallowing the response to request information outside agency's record. These actions resulted in the unreported hearings being held before the Biden's Cabinet Hall. A further issue was that the district court there by not articulating a decision regarding the proper expert witness disclosures or the requested order of protection. Lastly, the issue of attorney's fees being awarded to respondents when a client brought this case to the face of the client that based upon information from the agency's record based upon the trial information from the agency's record during the on-court process and upon judicial review. Your Honor, the call will show that the district court erred and not allowed the amendment of the complaint when response sought to delay amendment. Further, the call will show that the purpose of adjudication performed at law court tribunals were undermined when relevant information was discussed and considered without opportunity for objection or response from the public. Your Honor, the facts of this case were laid out on the call of court legally. Pages 2 through 14. Due to the limited time today, the facts are summarized but not limited to the following. I found that the prison student disability accommodations through the University for Postural Stress Disorder. Additionally, I found that there was a multi-role work car accident during the law school in which she sustained a traumatic brain injury. On April 6, 2017, Associate Judge had a meeting with Thomas and alternative dilemmas of food. We had also put on notice of the Thomas' exacerbated condition and concerns over the upcoming examination. At that time, stating concerns of the fall position. Two times for issue about water court replacements and the irregularities. Before those charges were adjudicated, that Robert thought and was approved to retroactive medical results. At all times, the honor code and the university's mutual responsibility agreement was being applied.
So, Council Contribution, Ms. Barber, I just want to be clear on the motion to amend. I know that there are some differences between the original complaint and the proposed amended complaint, but how do those differences apply to the breach of express contract and the breach of implied contract under your remaining? Because I didn't see how the amended complaint
Thank you for your question. There were some minor inconsistencies about what had taken place in discovery documents and issues surrounding factual discrepancies. It was not anything entirely resting upon the express or the contract.
So let me understand then what you were prevented from arguing on summary judgment that you would have been able to argue if the amendment had been allowed.
If the amendment had been allowed, then I was able to proceed with the complaints conform to the evidence arguments as read out and drafted.
Can you specifically explain to me what arguments were you prevented from making because the amendment wasn't allowed?
No, I don't believe that I would have made any different argument. I think it was that the evidence was not fully presented on the motion for summary judgment. However, that evidence didn't have to be there. The arguments could have been upheld on the merits.
How do you prejudice them by denying the motion for that?
That decision is reviewable by the court, and if it should have been amended, which justice so requires in the state of Idaho, then it would have been forward on one more performance allegations. It would have also allowed the respondent an opportunity to answer the allegations, and so you would have a better understanding of what their position was when they answered the allegations.
So, what was that other moment principally for applying the requirements of an abuse of discretion standard? That you would agree that was an abuse of discretion standard we're applying to that decision. The court was mighty of the transcript of the argument. Does he recognize discretion? He exercised the discretion within the bounds of the options available to him with reason. So what around the 4.2 factors, one of the factors are you saying the court got wrong?
Yes, Your Honor. The district court abused its discretion by not allowing an amendment on all of these breach of contract claims. The district court did not provide any reasoning to deny the motion to the breach of contract claims were not specifically addressed. And it was the new claims and new parties that the district court found would be a prejudicial delay and futile to respond.
I guess when we had just a small question, one of those new claims, we know already the prejudice to that summary judgment petition. As I understand your contract claims, you mean you were able to argue those that the judge ruled against you on summary judgment, but the claims are fully had. You're saying you know because the amendment should have been allowed, so what is it about the amendment that would have made a difference?
I appreciate the question, and I believe that the respondents would have been had sort of filed a response to the medical complaint after we got an answer, we would have been able to really ridiculous issues without knowing whether how response are going to respond to the allegations. My name is Brenda Spide.
And I'm not guessing what, but I'm trying to understand, would it be just by a fishing expedition that by bringing this new stuff forward, they were going to have to say things that might give you something that you could argue about later, but you didn't know specifically what it was?
Yes, Your Honor. So I don't know what rules of local procedure for the agency in the United States. And the minute of pleading was passed at the original pleading, when the law provides the ample statute of limitations allow for a relationship now.
But here, Ms. Barnwell, you're attempting to add new parts, right? And new claims with those new parts. Is that correct?
No, I have a particular question. I know John, the newly added claims to parties, and I have a breach of contract claim that I asked to be amended. That was not my claim.
And the nature of that amendment was what? The actual basis of that amendment?
It was a breach of contract claim. And the basic guarantee was not for double.
But wasn't that in the original contract? And couldn't that be done through the crucible of the trial? Had summary judgment not been granted?
I guess, Your Honor, but I would have had to overcome the threshold of summary judgment, which the respondent answered, and based on the allegations would have helped.
So, back to Justice Moore's question, what information were you not able to present at summary judgment that you feel like you would have if the amendment had been granted?
Question that's concerns in the prior contract as to what new evidence will you have reasonable.
documentation was not, that the earlier action made they were related to these allegations before the honor court and the honor court was not implemented. So for the honor court hearing on the legislators and his favor regularity that occurred, the Chief Justice was involved in the prior investigation of all the vital information and documents. This involvement was not disclosed to the honor attorney. The honor could not challenge the Chief Justice's authority after the end of the honor code. During email changes between Dodd and McFarland, the professor and the legislators and I told McFarland, Dodd told McFarland that he had authority to tell her about the cover. McFarland then refused to testify in the honor court hearing due to the less fear of the public and the proceedings to inform the prosecutor of all information that the public had an order of protection entered against her in the state of Montana. This information was not disclosed to the public nor her attorney, but was disclosed to members of the honor court. In other words, these people who recommended the station as a denial of degree in the state of a regulatory matter were the same people
Her fear was basically addressed by rearranging or a plan to rearrange the room that the hearing was going to be placed in. It did not, and then the plagiarism matter was dismissed without opinion, so how did that harm you in any way?
Yes, John, thank you for your question. The witness here, the professor of biology, complaint and the witness and the pleasure of that did not show up to the hearing at all. And she also had given
And did that help you because they dismissed the pleasures in that?
No, I don't have no decision issued by the on court dismissing the pleasures in
that. Is it still there?
No, I know not, but it was
there. I don't think it was not.
Right. Under the article, under GABA, I think it was supposed to submit a findings of fact and conclusion of law at issue a decision. Under the article, additionally, the university is required to issue a decision. Because the fact that McFarland had a less fear of me, and because she also had given this false information of a protection order, that painted the perception that those who were on the exam during the regulatory matter about my character. And the exam during the regulatory matter, the article specifically found that I was, that my account of what happened was completely implausible. However, documentation, alternative survivors of the police, medical providers all have spoken and said that before this exam regularity had occurred, they were concerned about my well-being and the state of my condition prior to taking this exam.
That's the question.
Thank you, Doctor.
Before we run out of time, Dorothy, would you have an opportunity to respond with a general several calls this year, Judge Collins, to honor his own ruling in discussing this in his ruling on going for reconsideration. He said it was undisputed his findings, that it was undisputed that Barton did not uphold the responsibility to comply with all university policies and a breach team agreement by Indian academic misconduct. Therefore, I would widely resisted by contractors within the university's rights and obligations to take appropriate disciplinary action. What about that finding, Mr. Colonel?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you for your question. First of all, I was allowed to re-enroll after this exam, I heard that the regularity matter occurred. The to adhere to their own college policies. And I also have, like I answered Justice Burdock's question, there was a lot of information telling the university that I was not in a good condition to be taking my exams together.
What about allowing return to school before the misconduct was communicated, who suggested that they were waiving a potential consequences for misconduct? I have to say they had a disciplinary proceeding, made a decision, and they're looking back at it. But you came back in before your disciplinary proceeding was concluded.
Yes, Your Honor. And the university promised they were going to adjudicate the matter, not with full information and sharing the paperwork they were going to adjudicate. This was a unit of process and was entitled to a partial hearing in a partial tribunal.
When you came back, you knew there was going to be adjudication of some kind, did you not?
Yes, sir.
I mean, it's not like that it was surprising you that they brought these charges when you came back, are you?
No, Your Honor, I was hoping that they would have communicated so that my rights would be clear. However, when they did not disclose the information that they went home, that's not an adjudication. That's not an adjudication impartially.
So your complaint isn't that they went ahead and adjudicated you, you just don't lack on the adjudication itself.
Right.
You don't lack on the proceedings and how they were pledged, right? But how does that constitute then an implied, a breach of an implied contract? I'm just trying to connect the dots between the fact you're alleging and the theory you assert.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you for your question. So, under the audit code, it says that the student can challenge the Chief Justice's partiality and the prosecutor's partiality. But I'm not having disclosed my attorney or I the government's information that they withheld from the record when that there was in trouble to challenge that impartiality. Further, the New York Supreme Court found that there was so many cases of commercial versus required that when the Chief Justice serves as the leading Chief Justice on the initial hearing and then also serves on the appeal hearing, what is not for the hearing. Basically, he had already made the decision in the hearing below of what he made, and then to have him on the same with to have him on the appeal, if this is not, it's not impartial.
So what I'm hearing is, this is real subtle, I'll make sure I understand. You're not really arguing that the school broke an implied promise to you that you can be admitted. You're really arguing that they broke an implied promise to give you a fair hearing.
Yes, Your Honor, an adjudication.
Is that how you fund this?
Your Honor, I believe so, and I have the agenda that allows the claim
what
have been further
that
correspondence and
going
through by myself.
That sounds more like a due process claim on that contract. I mean, some of the sound, it's not some tort of some sort.
No, the United States
Supreme
Court has held that the university that is entitled to give a student due process by the terms of the implied contract. So in other words, the university may have been allowed for more due process protection in the honor code than the United States gives due process protection. So the way that private courts have distinguished those is that the university when they promise to set out specific rules of how the hearing would take place, then they are bound by those promises. And so if they mirror due process rights, but that does not exclude due process rights, things form contracts.
So the entire contract, we say it's fair to you and your contract?
Yes, sir, I get it all from the president, and it was very good. That the party is precluded from exercising their rights for the benefit of the contract, then that's not what they use their dealing. Here, that is general information for which I will not be able to discuss or respond to one of the university experience tribunal. Therefore, my rights or my benefit to the contract were tethered.
So the issue this was submitted, it was mentioned to the judge justice, who was in this case, that we've seen different situations. We admitted that you had in fact violated the order.
Yes.
So, those statements to the issue of this are admissible by the court in this analysis.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you for the question. That is,
please.
Under the article the standard of appeal is whether the sanction should be reversed or whether or not it should be modified under the circumstances. And Your Honor, I don't believe that someone, a student who is not guilty of a violation, could be entitled to a modified sanction. That would be no sanction at all. So the fact that I breached, or the fact that I have breached the contract or with they were very does not mean that the university does not have a duty or an implied promise that they would find the sanction that is fitting to the effect, not find a defense for a sanction that may not compel other information of what you mean.
The article is also a judge go through the sanctions that were available. And because it was your senior year, it was second semester of your senior year, that normalization was appropriate of your...
Your Honor, I believe that Judge Shepard may have spoken about the sanctions and the range of sanctions. However, that reasoning was still deemed by
the time of the law.
There's the other
reason that I'm saying judge was taken by something, or are you talking about the article?
I was referring to the article. However, Judge Shepard never articulated any reasoning or showed that he had considered the impartiality or part of the violence of the judge he didn't even consider that. That was not part of his ruling. He saw that the fact that there was an alleged breach contract in the first contract, but the second contract didn't apply, and that no other promises of how adjudication at the university would take place matters.
These are uncontroverted facts. The appellant was found by the lawyer received by the law committee, if this condition complies with the honor, of completely having to do with this license. The other court said, code set worth agreed on is a permissible sanction for acting with this license. I'm going to assert that the acting with this license complaint in May of 2017. The complaint was based on her doing internet searches during a closed book remedy exam. She searched for the defendant's outline. She searched the defendant's crew, which just happened to be one of the questions on the exam. And by the way, she clearly used her laptop to search the internet during the remedy exam, the closed book remedy exam. That she was served in motion. So I'm not going to get off in the spring 2017 semester where it was granted. But where it was granted, it was expressly voted. This was not wash away the honor of the complaint. Nonetheless, she chose to alter the legal rules for the fall of 2017.
Did she need any permission to review it
all? It was granted. October 2017, the Honor Court formally filed charges against her. They say here that we need to see the ball in that decision. I'm sorry, I'd like to read three in the letter. Were you involved in that decision? I was. Excuse me. Well, that's it. Very good. Next, it's been in early December. She retained counsel and also requested to be reset. And so it'll be set for late January, early February 2022. After the hearing, she was allowed to cross-examine the dealership's witnesses. She was allowed to call the witnesses. She was allowed to testify. She was allowed to consult argument with the witness. She was allowed to argue the facts, the law, and for means. After hearing, she denied any academic response. She offered implausible explanations for the things that appeared on her computer. She claimed that the computer just happened to open up to the remedies pages that she opened that day. She denied ever doing a terrorist prison search. She had other things that the Honor Court just found not convenient. After the hearing, the Honor Court issued a written decision finding her explanation to be possible, and she never troubled because they did not believe that they had. She had said to them, during the other court hearings, second instance of the science. We've done that in clear and convincing evidence that she had committed academic dishonesty. We found that degree denial is the only appropriate method given that she's no longer in this school, or she was in New York. And you never consider the fact that she was honest to her, to ID dishonesty. So, she filled her bathroom, she appeared before the bathroom at least 45 or so. That would be around. She filled the bathroom She filled the State Board of Education, She filed a petition for judicial review of the district court. The petition was denied. She was denied with specific findings that the article on the science was supported by substantial account there. There was no specific finding that I could consider, nor was she denied a study. Either the procedural due process or such process. The court found that she had avoided the process. She drew that proceeding to this work, so she reviewed it. She filed a lawsuit with the Federal District Court with 9 causes of action. Each of those 9 causes of action were dismissed at summary judgment. And the court found her activity in her comment was so frivolous that it awarded the university $85,000 in attorney fees. She's now appealed to this court. This includes the same standard additional rules arguments. This is another important unconcrete fact. There have been many post-modern appeals and lawsuits. She has repeatedly that would have executed athletic dishonesty. At the end of the day, she repeatedly that you have testified that she has now repeatedly admitted that she was dishonest. When she honored her, when she denied admitting academic dishonesty. She admitted being dishonest on the exam and being dishonest to the honor. And yet, she persists. Yet, we're still here dealing with this nearly 7 years after she committed that kind of dishonesty. This has to stop. And it should stop because, as the Commission Court found, all of her claims are racist.
She made a claim here today that the Honor Court had access to information that they used in finding her guilty that she wasn't given access to.
So it was a rest on that. So it was supported by the record. Great speculation, not raised below. She can't agree on what she wants to appeal. She didn't raise below. The attorney's fees were given to the University of 117, is that correct? And this seems to me to have a significant ripple from this rock in the pond. Is the University of Iowa considered a state agency? The University of Iowa is a constitutional entity. That's what I mean. It's, there's a legal debate agency, constitutional agency. It comes out of this and resolves all the different cases sometimes. Has it ever been adjudicated? You go back to, I believe, perhaps back in the 1940s, it certainly was the constitutional nature of the university. I believe in the, Fisher for Judicial Review case, it was matters. Preliminary issue was whether or not the United States judge decided that it was. That's not before the court, I believe that was adjudicated in that case.
But you asked for attorney's fees.
Yes.
And one of the reasons is the most likely.
Yeah, correct.
Which means, and I was there, was all of it was answer. Are you admitting that you lost the agency or not?
The purchase is 12 by 17.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. The purchase is 12 by 17.
That's a yes.
Yes.
And 12 by 17 relies on Title 63, that definition of state agency. Is that correct?
Secondly,
yeah.
Could you say that? I couldn't hear that. His question was about Title 63 and I lost him.
And then the definition of state agency is set forth in 17 that relies on, I believe, the statute, maybe Title 63.
Yes, sir, certainly, judge, yes, in the usual case, we're right upon that we should stay in Title 63 because the university was experienced. So, I'll address your claims on you. It's kind of difficult to know. At the summary judgment hearing, she expressed an abandoned contract for statutory discrimination due process and technical claims. She announced that she was only proceeding under the filed contract with it. And yet, in her briefing, she appears to be attempting to sneak some of the abandoned claims back in. Of course, you're not allowed to do so. The court should hold the receiver in concession. The court should simply analyze the implied contract liability that she purported to catch. I'm not sure how it's going to shake out, so I've got to address some of those rules of her despite her concession. She clearly raised it, not the motion to limit as an error. So I'll certainly address that. 4 months into the case, a few months before seven judicial deadlines, she moved to another complaint by adding 2 new parties and 10 new claims. She basically wanted to make a new case. Judge denied the motion, which she believes was error. The appropriate starting of my hearing was the standard of review. The regulatory honor of amendment is clearly no discretion of the trial. We test. The trial court's exercise of discretion with 3-part test, where the whether they're proceeding as mature and special, whether they're acting within the outer boundaries of special consistent with applicable legal standards, whether the court reached the decision through the exercise of reason. Here, the trial court expressly acknowledged his 15-page written ruling that this is a discretionary decision. In this 15-page decision, they expressly acknowledged and set forth the legal standards applicable to the motion to amend. And they issued a 15-page decision explaining the reason for the amendment. The reasonable basis of arrest, there is no reason for counsel to wait so long for the true man. The amendment would have been required to set the following guidelines that cause unreasonable delay, which would be prejudicial to the allowed to protect the speedy trial. The amendment would be futile because the influence required by the sexual agents and would not be back to the 15C. The district court clearly met two-part test for an appropriate exercise of discretion. And there's no reason to overturn that here. Now, our opponent was not a single challenge to the city regarding two parties with two claims. Instead, she seems to be arguing that the amendment should have allowed her to new factual allegations the way the jury is only applied to our shepherds. That challenge is not applicable. She was quite silly, but it was silly fuel. She admitted that we had to do precisely. She did not try to carve out an exception for those parties. She's not arguing the well response solution for some judgment. So her position on this point is wrong. She cannot now complain for the whole relationship just. She makes a quote out of the University Council 7 on April 27th. After seeing her, it was a minute complaint. Yeah, there's a lot of false stuff on that. Because I want to look at it. Her counsel did. Changed it about a little while on the 27th, 1 month later. They turned her. Well, us for that thing. It's entirely inappropriate. This is a way of her own making. She could have left the complaint as it was. She could have found it the next day. You know, revised her, but she didn't. Senator Jeffrey. Again, we need to point out that we stressed out that our equitable relief claims were abandoned by several people for having some different hearing. The district court nonetheless addressed them and dismissed them, and as a result, it stopped. I think all of those claims. It's an inherent threat that would abandon Ryan's part of the expect, except the implied contract. The implied contract, rather, would accuse me that because the university allowed her to be willing and reasonable, there was an implied contract to give her a degree. But there was an implied contract given to disclaim to the faculty staff handbook, and sovereign immunity is a question we don't need to address it here. Because, as the district court allowed, the implied contract is not reach your obligation to comply with the order. You cannot be wise to deny the degree. But it's usually acting like dishonesty. It's also technically law that material breach of contract prevents the means of the party of the law. It was clearly material breach of this case. Regarding the re-enrollment, that was never a contract. She was told before she re-enrolled that the out-of-court proceedings were not going to work. She chose to re-enroll Nina, as she's admitted today, and in her briefing, she knew the out-of-court proceedings were not going to work. She knew she still faced jeopardy. Governor Quinte, you can't create contract rights. Yes, you can't create combat rights for Kevin Quigley. Kevin Quigley only prevents one party from doing something which deprives her of money in the contract. She did not have combat rights for the brief. She had combat rights that acted dishonestly made me to create the brief. He said, we can't change that. by the term of the year.
I'm not sure if this is an evolution of our original argument or not, but yeah, I don't know, arguing this kind of good faith fair dealing was breached because there was an implied agreement to provide a fair proceeding, and this wasn't a fair proceeding.
This is, in fact, an evolution of our argument that she came up with not guilty. It was not a reasonable amount for a judge in some general proceeding. There's absolutely no legal basis for this kind of entrapping claim. So there's no reason for really for the court to reach this good way that
it. And certainly it wasn't argued due process below.
No. And again, we had a petition for judicial review, which the court found that she was provided due process. I think there's a collateral sample issue upon due process claim. At the relief, we couldn't answer. The aim of relief, she didn't have full answer. She admitted academic dishonesty, but I think she had anything up with it. But, once she was talking she wants to keep that one, that was a specific process, promise that was reasonably relied upon. There was no specific promise that she would be awarded if she didn't know. That in opposite is true. She was expressed in total that the other court proceeding was not really rational. Also, in that context, there certainly was no reasonable reliance. You can't reasonably rely on a promise that was not made and a promise that you never promised on living during the year. So, it goes away as well. There are some peripheral matters I could invest if the court would like me to, but I think I've done the sessions for the
is there no questions from the court? Thank you. Madam Clerk, how much time does the client have remaining?
2 minutes, Your
Honor.
2 minutes. Thank you, Your Honor. For the record, I would like to say that page 2.2.2 of the record shows that before the prior to the other program, I told the prosecutor that I felt guilty. At no time did I believe anything differently. I argued that my attorney argued for leniency of the sanction, but was not to attend that I was not guilty. So please.
Are you denying the allegations still there?
No, Your Honor. I know that I have signed with the honor code. However, I'm also asking that for the trial to assess the sanction without the time to be molding bias by information that was not included on the record before the judicial review hearing. The center that took place in the case revealed the information that was withheld from the hearing. So there was no way for me to bring that up on judicial review because it had not been disclosed. There's not an avenue for discovery and other than that. The only court said that I was had an inability to tell the truth. And when I had offered testimony of trauma and being withdrawn for medical reasons, listened to having this predisposition between being a criminal and someone who has a protective order and someone who has gone through trauma, that does not say that the person was not telling the truth. It was trauma. And what happens?
Excuse me, you are
thank you
very much. Ms. Sparkman, counsel, this matter is now in judgment. We will make a decision in the course. The court will now make recess and the
all right, please.